Welcome to the South Shore's Morning News Weekend Review Podcast. I'm Rob Hackelow. Listen for the next 30 minutes as we take a look back at some of the big interviews from the week on the South Shore's Morning News, which airs live weekdays from 5 to 10 a.m. WATD, the South Shore's Morning News. I'm Rob Hackelow. We thought it might be fun. Here we are heading into the first weekend of November, and there is so much going on this time of year at Plymouth Patuxent. In fact, maybe you might want to take in one of those New England Harvest Feast dinners, PLIMOTH.org. Well, here to get into all related topics and some history as well, we've got the Deputy Executive Director and Chief Historian Richard Pickering is on the line with us. Richard, good morning.
Good morning, Rob.
Lots going on this time of year, right?
There is, and I'm looking forward to all the events that will happen Thanksgiving week with America's Hometown Thanksgiving Parade, the concert at Memorial Hall the Friday before Thanksgiving, the gathering of the drum and bugle corps from across the country on Sunday. There's so much going on, and I get to host so many of the Thanksgiving dinners here at the museum that I get to spend my Thanksgiving with thousands of people. It's very cool.
And maybe make some new friends.
Exactly. And what I say to our guest, Rob, is they're seated family style, so they might not know everybody at the table. And I remind them that in 1621, the English and the Wampanoag couldn't speak to one another except through a few translators. But they were able to spend 3 days feasting, playing sports, offering military demonstrations. So can I ask you to reach out to that stranger at your table, find out why they're here? And there was one year, as I was moving between the tables, a man grabbed me by the back of my blazer, and he said, "Richard, we are from six different countries at this table."
Wow.
And we've had some people say, I didn't know you before today. Do you want to do this again next year?" And so we have kind of these, like, same time next year, that old Alan Alda movie of people who only see each other on Thanksgiving Day.
Well, it's wonderful if you haven't experienced one of the New England Harvest Feast dinners to do that. And do you know, Richard, at this point, are there still any openings? I know there's still some openings before Thanksgiving. Is that still the case today? Or
there may still be some openings at the different seatings.
Okay.
And if the guests call the museum, the staff from Plentiful Catering can help them out.
Oh, that would be great. I know it's a lot of fun, and you hear stories. You're allowed to interact. There'll be some songs, and you'll notice one utensil is missing. I'll leave it at that. But it's a lot of fun, and the food is really good.
It is good.
Let's talk about, when it comes to Thanksgiving, maybe some myths, Richard, you want to dispel for people.
I think for people to step away from the historical paintings that always have this event filled with pilgrims and very few Wampanoag people, when actually it's the other way around. There were only 52 English men, women, and children that survived the first winter. And so when Usamequin or Massasoit arrives with more than 90 men, and it's entirely possible there were more natives here, because Edward Winslow's letter says Massasoit, his 90 men, amongst others. So imagine what that human portrait looks like on the land. And it also undermines, in recent years, there's been this real attempt to try to put animus or evil intent in the English bringing the Wampanoag to them. And nothing could be further from the truth. One, the English were the more fragile of the communities. Mm-hmm. Massasoit always controlled what was going on within his territories. And this was an example of diplomacy at its highest sophistication. And it's probably that coming together in the fall is an affirmation of the treaty that was made in March. Because we need to remember, Wampanoag people were pre-literate. There's no written language for another couple of decades. So it's in that face-to-face interaction that you affirm what you have said, because you cannot rely on a piece of paper.
Fascinating, and probably some good lessons for us to remember today. And it's good to really know the history and where we've come from and what was like then as opposed to now. And you can really get your questions answered. And if you go down to Plymouth Patuxent Museum, a lot of people will tell you everything you want to know. There's a lot you can see and experience and eat. So it should be a good time, right?
And if people want to know more about events going on within the region, visit the cplymouth.com website.
cplymouth.com, and you can download. They have a wonderful app as well. And joining us today, the Deputy Executive Director, Chief Historian Richard Pickering. And Richard, thank you so much for taking time with us.
Thank you, Rob. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Richard Pickering from Plymouth Patuxent this morning with us on WATD. In this segment, we're going to talk about some of the big moments of World War II. Joining us is New York Times bestselling author Martin Dugard. He is on the line. He is the bestselling author of Taking Paris and is the bestselling co-author of Bill O'Reilly's Killing series. This book is called Taking Berlin, The Bloody Race to Defeat the Third Reich. Martin, good morning.
Rob, good morning. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. Obviously, history is something you love to write about, and you're very talented at it as well. So let's talk about Taking Berlin and why you wanted to devote a book to this.
You know, the previous book that I did was Taking Paris. I had written about the fall of Paris in 1940 all the way through the recapture of Paris in August 1944, and I just felt like I wasn't done. You know, we still had more war. We had more war to fight. So I went back and So Taking Berlin picks up right where Paris left off. We start with D-Day. We go all the way through the fall of Berlin in May 1945. And it's one of those things where I kept it fast. I filled it full of great detail. But it's if Jason Bourne was going to, you know, be in World War II, this would be the book to be about. It's a very fast, thrilling read about all that happened during that time.
Yeah, and there was so much happening, and it's complicated in a sense. We're all allies, meaning the Soviet Union and U.S. and Great Britain. However, maybe not necessarily want the same things. So take us into the leaders and kind of where their thoughts were coming from in terms of ending this war and what would happen after.
Well, you know, the four pivotal figure, you know, on the Allied side, you had Roosevelt, you had Winston Churchill, you had Joseph Stalin. On the Axis side, obviously Adolf Hitler. Hitler was not of a mind to sue for peace until right around Christmas 1944, which is why we had the Battle of the Bulge. But once we landed on D-Day, you know, June 6, 1944, and 2 weeks later, the Soviets launched what was called Operation Bagration, which was huge. It actually dwarfed D-Day by a bunch. All of a sudden, you could feel the impending doom of Germany, and that's when the Allies quietly began splitting and thinking of more of a post-war world, which is why George Patton became very, very suspicious of Stalin, noting that the Soviets, once they invaded a territory, didn't want to give it up. And whereas we were looking at a world where we could let freedom reign, they were very much upon building the empire. It's the same thing Putin's trying to do right now. So there's historical foreshadowing all through the book.
Did Roosevelt and Churchill see this?
You know, Churchill saw it from day one. I mean, Churchill was prescient in the way that he looked at a lot of the historical stuff. He predicted World War II as far back as 1932, and everybody else thought the Nazis were nice people. But Roosevelt really never came around to seeing Stalin as a villain, and he would often take Stalin, he would pick Stalin as an ally over Churchill very much because Stalin had more potential power. He never foresaw that Stalin was going to be the kind of guy who was going to become an adversary to the United States once the war was over.
Yeah, because you talk in the book where Roosevelt says something like, you know, Great Britain doesn't speak for us. And that was something that Stalin knew. He could kind of play both England and the U.S., right?
He did, and he did brilliantly. He knew that, you know, let's face it, Britain was broke. They were coming out of the war with hat in hand. They had depended upon the United States for a few munitions and ships and tanks and all the kind of stuff that they needed for the war. And coming out of the war, Stalin knew the power in the West was going to be America. He wanted to be the power in the East, and he didn't think Great Britain was going to play a pivotal role, and sadly, he was correct.
Tell us about what it was like in those final days and weeks leading up to getting to Germany on both sides with the Americans and the British and the Soviet Union coming from the other side, and what was that like? Was it really a race to the finish?
It was a race until it wasn't a race. As early as, you know, the Yalta Conference in February 1945, we were both still trying to be first to be to Berlin, to get to Berlin. And then at some point, Eisenhower realized the cost in American men would be too great. And what he did was he ordered us to stop at the Elbe River, which was far, you know, 100 miles from Berlin, and basically give Berlin to the Germans, again, thinking the Germans were going to, you know, give it back. The Russians were going to give it back, and we just did not happen. And Patton saw this coming, and Patton actually kept pushing in the South. He pushed much, much further into the East and actually almost engaged Soviet forces. And again, it was one of those things that's, you know, the title taking Berlin hints that there's this big battle for Berlin between, you know, the Soviets and the Americans and the Germans. In fact, what happened was the Soviets came into Berlin, raped every woman they could see, they killed every man they could find. They just basically decimated the city as they took control.
Wow. So it really was a scorched earth type of strategy that the Soviets engaged in, and there were many Germans that would much rather give up to the Americans, right?
But the Germans were, as much as they could, the German soldiers were deserting and going west because they knew what happened. If you were caught by the Soviets, you disappeared. Yeah. You went into their prison camps, into the gulags, and the Germans would much rather have been with the Americans.
Wow. Taking Berlin, the bloody race to defeat the Third Reich. Martin Dugard is with us this morning. He is the national best-selling author of Taking Paris, and this talks about that story to the end. And you know, I often wonder, Martin, you know, if the leaders saw that, you know, would Germany, would the capital be divided, would the country be divided, and would Eastern Europe be in place for such a long time? You know, who saw that coming, and could the U.S. have done something differently?
We could have done a lot of things differently, but at the same time, we were so focused on, remember the Soviets came into Poland, for instance, and they were supposed to let the Polish people have freedom, and the first thing they did was behave just like the Nazis had behaved 6 years earlier. So we could have done something, but we were so focused on just getting to the end of the war, because remember, we still had Japan to think about. So the biggest thing was that we were focused on was taking care of Hitler and then starting to move men and material over to Asia to focus on the Japanese. And so we were much more focused on Japan than we were on the Soviets, much to our dismay.
Yeah. Taking Berlin, the bloody race to defeat the Third Reich. Martin Dugard with us, and the book is out now in stores and online, martindugard.com. Thank you, Martin.
Well, thanks very much for having me. Have a great day.
You too. That's Martin Dugard. He is the New York Times best-selling author of several books of history, among them the Killing series, Taking Paris, and, of course, this one, Taking Berlin. The South Shore's Morning News coming to you from Broadcast House here in beautiful Marshfield. I'm Rob Hakala with the morning team. We're going to be with you till 10 o'clock. And this segment is promised. We're going to talk about WeCare 365, Adult Foster Family Care Program. And Christina Spencer is with us. She is a marketing outreach specialist, and we're going to explain more about how it works, find out maybe if you qualify and how this could help you. Christina, good morning.
Good morning, Rob. How are you today?
Doing very well. It is nice to meet you, and thank you for coming in and spending some time to talk about a very important program, WeCare 365. And by the way, it's WeCare365AFC.com. Adult foster care. We say, we do, we care.
Exactly. And thank you so much for having us here today.
Absolutely. So tell us about where you guys are based out of, how this works, because there are things that people may be qualified for, right?
Exactly. So WeCare 365 is based in Brockton, Massachusetts. We are an adult foster care program. So mm-hmm. we help individuals who are taking care of their loved ones, and they require assistance with the activity of their daily living. So these caregivers, they get paid a stipend mm-hmm. every 2 weeks to provide care to those individuals.
Okay, yeah, because being full-time or part-time a caregiver can be overwhelming. You're doing that now and taking on these duties in addition to whatever you were doing before. And that can be stressful, and if you could qualify for a stipend, that would really help out.
Exactly.
So how does it work? How does someone get started? What are the first steps, Christina?
Sure. So we serve individuals 16 and older mm-hmm. with any type of disability, physical or mental, or individuals who have chronic illness, and they're not able to do the activity of their daily living alone, or they require supervision. Mm-hmm. And they must live with a caregiver. They must have MassHealth Standard or MassHealth Commonwealth Care. And if they are individuals who are 65 and older, and usually if they have MassHealth Standard, they can be enrolled with a different MassHealth health plan coverage, which is called Senior Care Options. And we are contracted with United Healthcare, Tufts Health Plan, CCA, which is Commonwealth Care Alliance, Fallon NaviCare, BMC, which is Boston Medical Center Senior Care Option. The only Senior Care Option plans that we are not contracted with is the Senior Whole Health.
Okay. All right. So the way it works is do you go through an application process to find out first if you're qualified and you vet the individual?
Yes. So usually they call our office mm-hmm. and our phone number is 508-584-2131. It's 508-584-2131. So they call the office. We run insurance eligibility to make sure they have MassHealth Standard or MassHealth Common Health. And then they will go to the process of intake where we ask them a series of questions to make sure they are clinical eligible for the program and make sure that they live with the caregiver. And once we get all that information, we transfer them over to an intake department. And a care manager will call them. They will start the application process. We do that. And after that is done, a nurse will call. Mm-hmm. And nurse will come to the house, do an evaluation to make sure that the individuals are clinical eligible for the program. And once we have all the, those done, we'll send a paperwork over to their primary care doctors. Mm-hmm. The doctor will write an order and will ask the insurance for the authorization, and the caregiver will start receiving payment for the program.
All right. So again, this is helping out families with financial assistance in the comfort of their own home. As we know, someone may have a condition, or it could be an elderly parent or a relative. Mm-hmm. And these may be things probably you might already be doing and you didn't know.
Exactly.
You know, like bathing, it says, feeding.
Feeding, bathing, dressing, walking, transfer, okay. Or sometimes if it's supervision. So if someone, even if you're not doing like a hands-on, if mm-hmm. you're not providing hands-on help, but let's say you set up for someone to go and take a shower, mm-hmm. but you have to be there to yeah. give supervision. So that is one of the things that can qualify an individual for this program. And like I said, they must live with a caregiver. So mm-hmm. they must have a caregiver at the house.
Yeah, this is not come and visit. It would be at, you know, in that home.
Exactly. So to become a member, mm-hmm. individuals have to be 16 and older mm-hmm. with a certain types of, you know, any type of disability. But to be a caregiver, they must live with the person in need of care, and the caregiver must be 18 or older.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Okay. WeCare 365AFC.com. And Christina, without giving, you know, full details, obviously with privacy, can you tell us about some of the stories where this has really made a difference? Just give us some examples.
Sure. So we have situation that there's like children is taking care of their parents.
Yeah.
Both. We have situation that they have both, mom and dad,
yeah,
and they go to work. But unfortunately, some caregiver, they have to cut down their hours of work to take care of their parents. So this financial assistant really helps. It's a stipend. Mm-hmm. They get it every 2 weeks. Doesn't count as an income. They don't have to report it at the end of the year. We have a lot of families, unfortunately, here in Massachusetts, there's a lot of family in like financial hardship. And they do get assistance from the state. For mm-hmm. instance, they get food stamp, or they get vouchers for the house, and they get Section 8. And a lot of times, they cannot work a lot of hours because by getting an income, it puts them over the income guideline to get assistance from the state,
oh,
right?
Okay. Yes.
So by doing the adult foster care program that is tax-free, you don't have to report, they can still work like a part-time or work like minimal hours, still taking care of their loved ones, and get the stipend from mm-hmm. the adult foster care program.
Wow.
So we have parents that have children who are disabled. And like a mom, usually it happens, majority of the time it's the mother, they have to stop working
yeah.
to take care of their children. So if they have a child that's 16 or older that's disabled, and mom can stop work, but still getting paid to take care of the child, and the father can continue to work, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of great stories that we help people. We've had family that were living in like one bedroom apartment for a while, and once they start getting the stipend, they were able to move to a bigger apartment.
It really can make a big difference. And I'm wondering, you know, maybe if people didn't even know that this was available, I would think they might just be doing this. Maybe they've been doing this for years.
Exactly.
And this is important. This is why you're here. So the first step would be, I guess, to find if you qualify.
Exactly.
WeCare 365 Adult Foster Family Care Program. WeCare 365AFC.com. And Christina Spencer would love to have you connect. You want to give out the phone number one more time?
Sure. It's 508-584-2131.
All right. 508-584-2131. They're based out of Brockton, and you can find out more online. We gave the website, WeCare365AFC.com. And Christina Spencer is a marketing outreach specialist, and she's been in studio this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, you can find us on your radio at 95.9 FM, mornings from 5 to 10, or online at 959watd.com.
And you can catch up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can get the links at 959watd.com/SS Morning News. And join us next week for another edition of the South Shore's Morning News Week in Review.